Welcome to The Jump Up, George Sedano, and October's here. That means basketball is back this month. Huge news in the Sixers and Ben Simmons saga, what this $8 million decision will actually mean. Plus, is the pressure mounting on Kyrie's availability? We'll let you hear what Nets owner Josiah had to say about Kyrie. And a Bay Day for a new look Clay, what to expect from the Splash Brothers. Happy Friday. The Jump starts now. All right, welcome into The Jump alongside the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, Brian Windhorst, host of the Low Post podcast, Zach Lowe, and the Cap Father himself, Bobby Marks. I'm George Sedano again. Breaking news, though, to begin the show. The Ben Simmons saga continues. The 76ers will not pay Simmons the $8.25 million owed to him today. This was the second payment of this season's $33 million rookie max extension. So, Windy, in this situation, with it all playing out around this payment to Ben, what are you hearing? What is going on? Why did this happen?
Yeah, so Ben Simmons and his representatives were prepared for this news today. They told 76ers owner Josh Harris and team president Daryl Morey during a meeting back in August that if they decided not to pay him, that it would not change his thinking and it would not affect his decision to want to be traded and not report to training camp and play with the team. They have gone forward and decided not to pay him, which is a conundrum because we've never seen this in the NBA before. This is an unusual contract structure. Typically, NBA players wouldn't start receiving payments on their new contracts for the next season until November 15th. This was an advance payment. So really, what the 76ers are saying here is, we're not going to pay you for your salary through midway part of the season. And so it is definitely a throwing down of the gauntlet. And if this wasn't already a war, this is a declaration of war that probably pretty much closes the door tight on Ben Simmons having any interest in bridging this gap in reporting.
Bobby, how do you weigh in on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think what they've done is they've put this money in an escrow account here. And once he starts missing preseason games, which is starting on Monday, which is $227,000 that he'll lose, it makes it a lot easier for them to deduct that. So if Ben Simmons misses the next, you know, let's say four games, off comes $1 million of that $8.2 million that is owed to him. And I think if there was ever a 1% chance, let's say, that Ben Simmons had to go back to Philadelphia, I don't think that's the case right now. I think this is kind of the final blow here. I think what Philadelphia has said is that they're going to put their feet in the sand, and you know, either you're going to come and report and you'll get paid or not, and we'll withhold your money.
Zach, how do you feel about this situation?
Yeah, I think today is like Brian said, both a declaration of war and totally expected by both sides and by the players union, which is being looped in on all of this, because this is an unprecedented situation. I think along with withholding the money, the Sixers are going to send Ben Simmons representatives and Ben Simmons himself a message. The money's here for you if you come and you pass your physical and you start participating in team activities. All the money comes back. All the money that we're allowed to still pay you comes back. And we're just going to have to see how it plays out. But this, in conjunction with Joel Embiid's comments yesterday, and Joel spoke very eloquently for about 4 or 5 minutes about Ben Simmons, some of which was positive, but some of which was also seemed sort of like Joel is fed up with the whole situation, called it borderline disrespectful, went back and talked about how we got rid of Jimmy Butler to appease Ben Simmons and his need for the ball, and you're not here with us. It does feel like we're reaching a breaking point here, and the longer this goes, the more it looks like the Simmons team is not bluffing about, yeah, we'll light $32 million on fire if that's what it takes to get out of here.
Brian, let me ask you real quick. Does this expedite the process of a potential trade?
Well, that's really the situation that is an unknown. Only the 76ers know what offers that they are holding. And I know that there hasn't been a lot of movement publicly, but I was just talking to some teams in the last few days that say there's still dialogue going on. But what I do think that this does is it's going to be another talking point. The next time the Sixers face the media, the next time Doc Rivers faces the media, he's going to get asked about it. We just had a 24-hour news cycle about what Joel Embiid said. Now we're going to have a 24 to 48 hour news cycle about this non-payment. And every single day that the 76ers camp is disrupted, it again increases the pressure on them to do something about it. Now, ultimately, the results of the games are going to speak loudest, but this is being a very disruptive thing. Here we are a week into training camp, and we have got daily reports on movements in this. This is just not a way to run a team, and it is not a way to be a healthy organization, and that's the situation that they're in.
All right, now on ESPN.com, Bobby, you broke down all of the teams in the league's chances of making a deal with the Sixers for Ben Simmons. You broke it down into five tiers. Here's a look at the teams most likely to be in the hunt: the Trailblazers, the Cavs, the Pacers, the T-Wolves, the Spurs, and the Raptors. Bobby, which of these potential deals makes the most sense for both teams here?
Well, I think when you look at teams like Portland, certainly with C.J. McCollum, I think with San Antonio, with players like Derek White and Deontay Murray, I think those are the two teams that probably makes the most sense. But the one thing to keep in mind is that we're 1 week into training camp. Everybody loves their roster right now, right? Nobody is going to make a deal and shake up their roster until maybe we get into that early part of November and a team thinks they're a Ben Simmons player away. They're struggling at that point. It's hard to make these type of deals in training camp. But when you take the 29 teams and you put them into five different categories, really there's only five or six teams that have the right pieces to make a Simmons type deal.
Zach, who do you look at on that list and say, this is a team I think makes sense?
Well, what I look on that list is when you flash the Portland screen up, the three words that are most interesting to Philadelphia were off the table in front of Damian Lillard, because they would like Damian Lillard to be very much standing on the table waiting to be acquired. I do think Portland makes the most sense and a straight Ben Simmons, CJ McCollum swap. The problem is I think both GMs involved, Daryl Morey and Neil Olshey, would say, hey, we're trading the better player. You got to throw something in to make us do it. And that's a stalemate that I don't think is going anywhere anytime soon. I think a wild card in there, Bobby mentioned San Antonio, that's one. Another team that I'm looking at, particularly if they got off to a slow start, a team that's got a lot of overlapping personnel, underachieved last year, made a huge coaching change, and that's Indiana. And they've got a lot of interesting players that could fit with Joel Embiid. The problem is they only have one guy who's an all-star, and that's Domantas Sabonis, and he was kind of the last all-star that made it in. I just think Philly is looking at those pieces, and he's obviously a center. He plays the same position as Joel Embiid. I think Philly would look at a Malcolm Brogdon or a Caris LeVert and say, wait a second, Ben Simmons made All-NBA two seasons ago. We got to get someone of commensurate value. We're trying to win right now. It's going to be really hard to make a deal.
Wendy, what do you think?
Yep, Zach just hit it. I think the sleeper team in this whole situation is the Indiana Pacers. First off, I know that they don't have an All-NBA or NBA player to trade. I realize that. But they have a bunch of really good players. And as Bobby illustrated in that list, they control all of their picks. That is not like the Portland Trailblazers. They don't control that trade a package of players and picks the way a team like Indiana can. Plus, Kevin Pritchard likes to trade for guys who are under contract. They know that they're never going to be a free agent destination. So when they trade for a guy like Victor Oladipo, or they trade for a guy like Caris LeVert, who has a bunch of years left, they like that. They love the idea of being able to trade for a player like Ben Simmons, who they would have team control over. It makes a lot of sense, especially because with as much talent as they have and as much money as they're spending, I still think they're just in the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference. And they've got a premium coach now in Rick Carlisle. You can try to add a premium talent there. I think they are sitting there waiting for the Sixers to come to terms with, make the best deal they can, because I think they can put forth an offer that few teams can rival.
Basketball fans certainly love a transaction, so I'm sure plenty are tuning in right now and are scrolling to get to this Bobby article on ESPN.com. There's a second tier as well with some very interesting teams and names here: the Hawks, the Celtics, the Pelicans, and the Warriors. Bobby, which one there makes some sense?
Well, the one team that intrigues me a little bit is Atlanta, and I don't think many people have talked about it. And just because of the fact that eventually they're going to have to make a decision on players like Cam Reddish, DeAndre Hunter. They have the big contracts with Bogdan Bogdanovic, Danilo Gallinari here. That's something for down the road, especially if this team struggles. And there's a lot of expectations in Atlanta to get to potentially an Eastern Conference Finals. But the Hawks intrigue me just because of a Ben Simmons, Trae Young backcourt.
Zach, where do you lie on this one?
I think the Hawks strike me as a team that's like, wait a second. We just made the conference finals. We're good. We're rising. A shakeup of that magnitude right now almost feels premature and unnecessary, even with what Bobby just said about they're going to have to consolidate some of these players down the line because they can't pay everybody. The wild card team to me there is Boston, because when we talk about good teams that control all their picks, we don't hear about the Celtics very much. And the Celtics, I think, would be looking at a situation where we're not trading Jaylen Brown, we're not trading Jason Tatum, but hey, we got all these picks, we got all these swaps, we can get in on these trades. The problem is it would have to be a three-team trade because they're not trading Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum. They like, I think, the idea of Simmons plus Tatum plus Brown is this sort of three supersized wings, all good defenders. Simmons can screen and run and pass. I think that's an interesting one, but I think it would have to be a tricky three-team trade.
Brian?
A three-team trade is a no-team trade. I know they happen, but they die 99% of the time. I don't like the fit for any of these, to make it simple. And I can tell you, I understand why Bobby put the Warriors on here, but we can scratch the Warriors because their owner just got fined $50,000 for saying, we're not trading for Ben Simmons. So I don't think that's going to happen in the short term.
Well, Bobby, thank you so much for joining us here to start the show. Appreciate it, man. Great to see you.
Thanks, guys.
You got it. All right, coming up next, speaking of the Warriors, Steph Curry says he's taking pride in shutting up the haters. But how good will his Warriors actually be this season? Stay tuned to The Jump. For the first time since Jordan's comeback was made official, he's officially opening his mouth.
I'm going to play the game of basketball. I hope we win. My opportunity is to try to go out and make this a winning franchise. But I'm going to be happy when I step on that court because I'm playing basketball. And you say, well, the young dogs are going to chase me around. Well, I'm not going to bark too far away from them either. You know, I'm not running from nobody. I think, if anything, it'd be a great challenge for me. I'm not saying that I can take Kobe Bryant or I can take Tracy McGrady. I'm pretty sure they're sitting back and welcoming the challenge. Guess what? I'm sitting back and welcoming the challenge, too.
20 years ago today, Michael Jordan spoke to the media for the first time after joining the Wizards. Brian, you like that confidence from MJ at 38 years old?
Narrator, they didn't play good basketball, but he still could play with Kobe Bryant and Tracy McGrady.
Are you kidding me? I'm ready to go. I'm ready. Come on, Mike. Come back. That was so cool. Michael Jordan, the coolest ever. I want Kobe. I want T-Mac. I'm ready. Put me in.
Oh, man. I'm with you guys for sure. By the way, shout out to Trey Wingo doing that SportsCenter clip there, tossing to MJ as well. Love Trey.
Nice.
How great it is to have the NHL's best on ESPN.
What it do, baby?
Make, miss. It's a make or miss league, baby. That's it.
By the way, want to make sure we shout out Sean McDonough, Steve Levy, Linda Cohn, the whole Bucci, the whole gang. NHL's back. By the way, make, look, always. You got to look away. Yeah, here. WNBA playoff, Sky Sun.
Lefty.
Watch the look away here from Candace Parker. Zach, what do you think?
Lefty, Candace Parker can do it all. She can do everything. WNBA playoffs have been awesome. Everybody should be tuning in. These guys, these games have been fantastic. We're going to talk about Diana later.
That angle, that last angle was just wicked. Just a wicked pass. Oh, man.
Yep. Next, miss hesitancy. Kind of like me on this highlight reel. The dance that's sweeping the country, the Smeez. Brian, how would you rate Dame Smeez? And how it compares to York?
I didn't even know what it was called, but I'm not saying anything about dancing when it comes to Dame. He can dance me under the table.
Look, I'm not averse to dancing around my kitchen, dancing at weddings, dancing around my living room, but I'm not going to critique Damian Lillard's dancing. Let's put it that way. I've seen myself in the mirror dancing, so I'm just going to say good job, Dame.
Well, I think you both can spit bars, though, like Dame. Now, not the rap game bars, but podcast bars. Shout out to the Hoop Collective and, of course, the Lopos. Next, make changes. Here's some video from our Jessica Shobar. She took it of Clay getting shots up. He's wearing a headband, and the last time he wore a headband was in the second half of that Chicago game back in 2018 when he dropped 52 points on 14 threes. So, Zach, you think headband Clay is here to stay?
Clay Thompson contains multitudes. There are so many Clays. There's headband Clay, swimming Clay, scaffolding Clay, Oklahoma City killer Clay. Every Clay is amazing. I just want any Clay, healthy Clay. Give me Clay.
The footage of him swimming in the San Francisco Bay, like just like looking back away from his boat, like I don't know if that's hilarious or crazy or a little bit of both.
That's a little bit of both, I would say. All right, let's shift to the Bay Area where Clay was swimming, where Steph Curry addressed the haters who doubted him last season after missing most of the 2019-20 season with a hand injury. Steph returned with a vengeance, putting up historic numbers and leading the league in scoring, averaging 32 points in 63 games. Yesterday, Steph told Frank Isola and Brian Scalabrine on SiriusXM NBA Radio how it felt to silence all the noise with his play. Let's take a listen.
I mean, there was a moment at the beginning of last year, before the Portland game in the 62, that I heard a lot of noise and I heard a lot of talk about who I wasn't and we were going to get exposed and I was going to get exposed and all that type of stuff. I definitely took pride in, you know, shutting that up. But it's also the realization that when you're in the fight and every year you're, you know, in that chase of the mountaintop and trying to, you know, win championships, I might get it more than other people just because I wasn't supposed to be here.
So Wendy, Steph says he took pride in shutting up the haters. What are your expectations for the Warriors this year?
You know, I'm not, obviously Steph Curry is a guy who's taken criticism rightly or wrongly in his career. I think the Warriors and Steph were what they thought they were last year because we thought he'd be great. He was. He almost won the, you know, scoring title and he led a team that fought till the bitter end but wasn't quite up to snuff without Klay Thompson. And so this year I think that they will be better because they're going to have Klay back. But we've got big questions. We don't know how much Andrew Wiggins is going to play. We don't know how much they're going to get from their young guys. But I do know that Steph Curry will be great. Those are things that we do know, and I don't care what anybody says. He's an all-time great player. He was an all-time great player 5 years ago. He was an all-time great player last year. He'll be an all-time great player this year.
Zach, this feels, I mean, we saw the roster and the way it looked like right there. You know, you got this split between these young guys and the older guys. How do you try to balance that if you're the Warriors?
I think the Warriors have a really high ceiling. Like, if everything hits right for them, I think they could actually challenge to get out of the Western Conference. Let's leave aside the obvious, right? They need Clay and they need Andrew Wiggins, who's not vaccinated yet, reportedly, and hasn't played. I think the biggest challenge for them beyond that is they're going to need something out of the Otto Porter, Nemanja Bjelica veteran crew that didn't do all that much last season for anybody, and the kid crew of Moody, Kuminga, and Wiseman. That's five guys. Like, you're not getting that deep into your rotation before you're relying on some of those guys. And I think that's the biggest wild card. If they can get production out of those guys, you can throw in Andre Iguodala if you want because of his age. They could be a really dangerous team, but there are a lot of ifs that have to go right for them. One thing that is not an if, though, as Brian said, is Steph Curry's a first-team All-NBA player last year, this year, the year before, the year after. The guy's a god.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Although those young guys, and maybe this is recency bias since I did some of his games at Summer League, I feel like Moody, the kind of the 3-and-D type player, could potentially help them maybe a little faster than some of those other young guys on this particular roster. That's just me, but we'll see how that all works out. Coming up, Nets owner Joe Tsai gave his opinion on Kyrie's situation. Is Brooklyn starting to put pressure on Kyrie? We'll discuss in a moment. But first, here's what The Jump recommends today. Our own Brian Windhorst on how LeBron and Carmelo finally ended up as teammates 18 years after being drafted in the same draft class. Check it out. You're on The Jump. All right, I'm ready. Here's our next UFC Fight Night tomorrow night from the Apex in Las Vegas. Thiago Santos takes on Johnny Walker in the light heavyweight main event that starts at 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on ESPN+. To get ESPN+, go to ESPNplus.com or download the ESPN app. Kyrie Irving was active at Nets practice in San Diego as the Nets prepare for their preseason opener against the Lakers on Sunday. Kyrie is still at risk to miss home games in Brooklyn with the New York City vaccination mandate for indoor events. Nets owner Joe Tsai was asked about Kyrie and told the New York Post, quote, "So Kyrie talks about it as sort of a personal choice issue, which I respect. But we all need to not forget our goal. What is our goal this year? What's our purpose this year? It's very, very clear. Win a championship." We now welcome in Om Young-Misuk, who's covering the Nets and their camp in San Diego. And Om, how does Sy's quote affect Kyrie's next move here?
It's going to be really interesting to see. I mean, George, look, I spoke briefly to Joe yesterday. He's a very level-headed, very rational guy, but he also is competitive and wants to win and has made it very clear. We all know the Brooklyn Nets, their expectations is to win a championship. As much as Kevin Durant does not like to hear that anything less would be a failure, this team knows what's ahead of it, and they know they need Kyrie Irving on the court as much as possible. So I think Joe is kind of putting it out there gently, you know, because he did say he understands Kyrie, saying that this is a personal point of view thing. But at the same time, Joe is a big proponent of being vaccinated. And so he would like to see his team obviously all together on the same page trying to win the championship.
Now, you've been around all week with the Nets. How does the team feel about Kyrie right now?
So, look, they are practicing inside right now. And from outside the closed doors, you can hear them. They are very vocal right now, rooting each other on, communicating, working on their chemistry. When we are allowed into practice, we see Kyrie with the other guys. This is not a distraction right now here in beautiful San Diego, because look, even when they're inside there working on their basketball, Kyrie's allowed to be on the court. That's why being in San Diego helps. There's not that many reporters here in San Diego. This is not a distraction now. Now, next week could be a different story, because if Kyrie is not allowed to practice with them and he can't play in that first preseason game, this is an issue that keeps going on with the Nets. But for now, in lovely San Diego, it's not a distraction.
Enjoy lovely San Diego. Thanks, brother. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Kyrie's on-court presence proved to be a benefit in the playoffs. The Nets were 6-3, outscoring opponents by nearly 10 points a game when he was in, and they lost 2 out of 3 without him as they were eliminated by the Bucks. As we bring back in Zach and Brian, Zach, does Sy's comments suggest an increase in pressure on Kyrie to be vaccinated?
Not really. I mean, what's being communicated publicly has already been communicated privately by anyone with power in the organization, and maybe including Kevin Durant, Kyrie's close friend. The Nets have remained optimistic this whole time that it will happen. He will get vaccinated. He'll be able to play in home games. They were optimistic it would be done before training camp. Obviously, that hasn't happened. Good thing they decamped to whatever fancy villa they look to be practicing in San Diego. Props to Om for the pink shirt, by the way. So we'll see. I don't think this moves Kyrie either way, but they need him. If they want to get where they're going to go, they're going to need everybody. That's the bottom line. You want to be on the team or you don't want to be on the team? You can't be halfway in and halfway out. At some point, you got to make a decision.
I think Joe Tsai has shown remarkable patience with Kyrie Irving, because there were obviously some things last year that took place that could have sent a little bit of a more aggressive owner on tilt. He is but nothing but outwardly supportive of him, and generally he gave several interviews yesterday. He was generally supportive of him. Having said all that, Kyrie Irving, if he wants it, I mean, I still can't be sure what Kyrie Irving wants in life, to be honest with you. There's a $180 million extension possibility sitting there. And if he doesn't extend and becomes a free agent next year, there's a potential $200 million contract. Ultimately, at the end of the day, Joe Tsai is the man who decides whether he's going to put his signature on the other end of that piece of paper. And so how Kyrie handles this, certainly now and the rest of the season, that is where Joe Tsai is going to be able to have his biggest opinion on that. But right now, he's just letting Kyrie be Kyrie and hope it works out.
If he doesn't go for whatever reason, Zach, how do you feel about the rest of the roster?
I mean, that's the luxury of having three superstars, all of whom are among the greatest one-on-one scorers in the history of the NBA. If one goes out, you still have a chance. Heck, they were down to 1.5 with James Harden hobbling around, and Kevin Durant almost beat the current champions by himself anyway. But look, injuries happen in the NBA. That's why you collect stars. Adversity happens. That's why you need all the ammo you can to win four straight rounds. So obviously, their roster is awesome. It looks awesome when everyone's healthy. I think they actually could win the championship without Kyrie Irving if everything else was pristine, everyone else was currently healthy, perfectly healthy, they got the right slate of opponents in the playoffs. But those kind of scenarios don't happen in the NBA. That's not real life. That's fantasy NBA. In a real NBA, you need everybody.
You know, sitting there Monday in Brooklyn at Barclays Center, watching all these guys come in for interviews, I mean, you know they're on the roster, but as you see them come in, you're like, they got Blake Griffin, they got Patty Mills, they got Joe Harris, they got James Johnson. You're like, they got LaMarcus Aldridge. Yeah. They're, you know, they keep running dudes through there. You're like, you know, this is a real team. Yeah. So yeah, I think they're really, really potent. But I'll tell you who else is potent. The Bucks. The Bucks are an awesome team. They're gonna be together. They're gonna, you know, be healthier than they were, you know, in theory. And I saw Giannis. The Giannis that I saw in the finals last year would scare me if I was every player in the league. So yeah. I agree with Zach. I mean, definitely I can build you a case with a whiteboard that the Nets could win it without Kyrie. But Joe Tsai knows, and Kyrie knows too, if you want to have a chance to win the ring, it's awfully hard to do it without your whole team.
No doubt about it. It's certainly something we'll keep a very close eye on. Coming up next, speaking of things we'll keep an eye on, Bradley Beal is now eligible to sign a four-year, $181 million extension, but should the Wizards be worried that he's in no rush to sign a long-term deal? We'll discuss that. But first, time for our distant replay here. This one, from Aaron Gordon back in 2018. Check it out.
Can't leave him.
Ooh, hello.
It's switching very well, and somebody got their signals crossed.
Such ease.
The defense was airtight until...
Don't give Aaron Gordon an open lane to the basket. That's my coaching tip for today.
Bendiciones para los
míos. Deseos. So the Twitter streets posed a very interesting question last night. Will Lonzo Ball be an all-star in his career? Zach, what do you think?
I would lean no, but it's really, really close. He's kind of one of those unconventional players that's never going to get there with his scoring, so it'd have to be his all-around play for a really good team. I could see him cracking one or two, but I would lean no if forced to bet. He's a really good player, though.
You know, typically we see guys by their fourth year in the league, we kind of know who they are. Maybe we can see them getting, you know, their upside a little bit. When you look at Lonzo, you know, he's been on now three teams. It's kind of been hard to get a judge. It wouldn't, like, completely blow me away that he's elevated to that, but if I was like Zach, I would probably wager against it. But yeah. LaMelo, we'll see about that one.
Oh, so you think he may not even be the first Ball to get there, which, look, makes a lot of sense.
Well, he's got to compete with his brother for the spot.
Yeah,
he's in the East now.
No doubt. All right, we'll be back in a moment. The WNBA playoffs have been lit. And last night, Diana Taurasi went to work against the Aces. She scored a playoff career high 37 points. And get this, went 8 of 11 from three-point range as the Mercury evened up the semifinal series at one apiece. Taurasi is now the oldest player to record a 30-point game in league history. So, Zach, what is your reaction to Taurasi's epic performance last night?
Same as ever. There are a few topics in life I can't talk rationally about, and one of them is Diana Taurasi. I can't do it. She's too incredible. She's amazing. She's the GOAT. She's the best to ever do it. She's a complete badass. I can't even talk. Move on to somebody else. I can't talk about Diana Taurasi.
You know, I will have almost no good memories from my time in Tokyo this summer. It was that type of Olympics. But the one thing that I really enjoyed when I was there was watching Sue Bird and Diana Taurasi on what's probably their swan song and winning their fifth gold medal. Watching the Team USA women and watching their dominance and the way they played together and the way they sacrificed roles, it was great. Breonna Stewart played out of position, and she was awesome. Watching everybody in that building have the respect, the undying respect for those two spectacular athletes was great to see. And then getting to talk to them after the games as they went through it, it was really enjoyable. I know that we're supposed to be talking about last night, but it was the first time I ever got to see Diane and Sue play live, and so I really enjoyed it.
Well, look, I'll tell you this. As a father of a 7-year-old daughter, we were watching the game yesterday, and she's about to start to learn to play basketball with a group of kids. So I said, if you can do 0.5% of what that woman can do, you're going to have a lot of fun playing basketball in your life. So speaking of which, Sunday, both game threes in the best of 5 WNBA playoff semifinal are coming up. The top-seeded Suns square off against the Sky at 1 Eastern, noon Central. That's 10 a.m. Pacific. Then on ABC, it's Taurasi's Mercury taking on the second-seeded Aces. Both games are available on the ESPN app. It's October 1st, and that means that Bradley Beal is eligible to sign a 4-year, $180 million extension. Beal reportedly will wait on deciding whether to sign, and of course told the Washington Post this, quote, "We worry about the contract and money and all that later. I'll let them deal with it when the time comes, for sure. I got all year to sign, too. I'm in no rush." So, Wendy, should Beal take the extension, and how should the Wizards feel about this?
You know who's in a rush, George? The Wizards. The Wizards would have liked it signed at 12:01 a.m. And that is the responsible thing for Bradley Beal to do. He can earn tens of millions of dollars more by waiting until next year. Anybody who was presented with this set of circumstances would probably wait. That said, you have a guy like Giannis last year who extended in this window because he wanted without any distractions, and they end up winning the title. Really what this comes down to is, what is your trust level with Bradley Beal if you are the Wizards? If you trust him and believe he's with you, and they have to have had conversations in that regard, then you stick with him. But this is one of the worst positions to be in sports, when you have a player that everybody wants and could be very highly desirable in free agency headed into his walk year. It's very unsettling. Beal has said all the right things. He had an opportunity to ask out this last summer when Russell Westbrook did, and he did not. But there's going to be nervy times ahead for the Wizards if he doesn't sign this, which it sounds like he's not.
I'm a little verklempt still from the Sue and Diana photos. I haven't recovered emotionally from that to be able to address Bradley Beal. Look, you can map out all of Bradley Beal's options and how much money he can make. The bottom line is, it's like an amazing amount of money, kind of more amazing, maybe slightly less amazing. It's all amazing. So if I'm Bradley Beal, I'm in the late prime of my career, my late 20s. I'm not going to tell him what he should do or what he shouldn't do. Obviously, the Wizards want him to sign today. Bradley Beal's got a way. How much do I value the security of signing for $180 million? Let me repeat, $180 million today versus after years in trade rumors, after the Wizards just remade the entire roster around me, and did it amount to anything? Is this a play-in team? Is this a playoff team? We'll see. How much do I want to have unilateral, unfettered control of where I finish the rest of my prime, where I play the rest of my prime, where I can maybe try to chase a ring somewhere, play on a great team? How much do I value that freedom? Because look, you can say sign the extension, demand a trade later. Lots of guys have done that. Bobby Marks has written about that. As Ben Simmons is showing right now, that can get ugly. That can put you in the spotlight for a long time. That can get financially complicated. So he's just got a way. Security versus total control of his career. I don't know what he should do, but in theory, he's been languishing there in Washington for quite a long time.
Yeah, and it can get uncomfortable, as we've seen, certainly. But, you know, it just seems like there's only so much this team can do, and he's taken them as far as he can, right? I mean, he's been unbelievable the last two seasons, so I don't know how much better he can actually get. I mean, he's certainly holding up his end of the bargain. All right, as we sit 18 days from opening night, 2018 number one pick DeAndre Ayton is still without a contract extension. The Suns have until October 18th, or else Ayton will be a restricted free agent following this season. Already this summer, Luka Doncic, Trae Young, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, and Michael Porter Jr. have agreed to rookie max extensions. So, Zach, do you think Ayton and the Suns will agree to an extension by the October 18th deadline?
Well, I can tell you for sure what's happening is that DeAndre Ayton's agents are looking at all those max extensions that you just showed and said, let's see, DeAndre's team got farther in the playoffs than that guy, that guy, that guy, and that guy, and he was the breakout star of the playoffs for the Phoenix Suns. He's doing everything right to buy into the team. So I want a max. We want a max. Max or nothing. And I could see Phoenix taking it to the wire and trying to negotiate a little wiggle room here or there. I think this is a true 50-50 case. If you're asking me to make a prediction, I'll say to keep the good vibes going, Phoenix inks him to an extension before the season, and maybe they get some concessions, like it's a max, but it doesn't have the escalator clauses and all that stuff that every player wants. But I think if I had to bet, I bet they get it done just to keep the vibes rolling there.
Yeah, so the issue here is when you look ahead to next summer, if you're the Suns, you're saying, well, if we don't give him a max today, could somebody else come in and give him a max next summer? And there's just not that many teams with salary cap space right now. This is a factor for all of these guys looking for contract extensions in the next couple of weeks. Guys like Colin Sexton, one of Ayton's teammates, Mikal Bridges, Miles Bridges. These are guys who may not have much of a market next year because there's not much space out there, and the teams are weighing that. But that said, what Ayton knows is he's very, very important in the success of this team. He's not their best player, but he has that most important player role. When he plays well and fills his role setting screens, playing defense, rebounding, getting out there and defending on the perimeter when on switches, the Suns are at their best. Also, he knows they've just paid Chris Paul, you know, something around $75 to $100 million to try to get the most out of the last couple of years. The last thing that they need is drama and thinking that that could be disrupted, and that is on Ayton. Inside, which is why ultimately I think they'll come to terms, because Ayton has shown nothing but growth. And this is what I like to call the fun max. This is the max contract where you only get 25% of the cap. You're usually younger and in your prime and not yet looking to move anywhere else. Not the case with Ben Simmons. No fun there. But this is the fun max, and usually these fun maxes get done on players like Ayton.
Yeah, I'll just echo what you guys said. I mean, the good vibes, Zach, I thought was a great point. And hello, you hadn't made the playoffs in 10 years. You made the finals. Like, what are you waiting for? Let's go. Like, get everybody back on board. You got two young stars with a veteran guy who's kind of taught them kind of the way a little bit. This makes all the sense in the world. I do think it'll get done. James Jones and company will get this done. All right, up next, Donovan Mitchell and the Jazz are only 15-1 odds to win the title despite leading the NBA in wins last season. Are the Jazz being slept on, though? We'll discuss that next. It's crunch time here on The Jump. The Miami Heat announced today that Ruth Riley Hunter will expand her current broadcast role and serve as both broadcast analyst and moving as well to basketball operations as a basketball analytics and player programs manager. Ruth Riley Hunter, two-time champion, MVP, finals MVP, was the first ever pick of the Miami Soul, which became the Connecticut Sun, and she's lived in Miami for a long time. It's a great addition to their basketball ops staff. So congratulations to Ruth and the Miami Heat. According to Caesars, the Utah Jazz are tied for fifth with Phoenix for the best odds to win the title this season. They also finished with the league's best record last year and bring back all of their key pieces. So Zach, are people sleeping on the Jazz?
I don't think people are sleeping on the Jazz. I think the Jazz need to prove it in the playoffs a little bit. And this is a huge year for Utah. Let's review some of the things that have happened in the last year. New ownership that includes Dwayne Wade. Dennis Lindsay shoved aside. Another advisor, David Morway, shoved aside. Head trainer not returning after a kerfuffle with Donovan Mitchell ahead of game one of the playoffs about Donovan Mitchell's ankle injury. And oh, by the way, they couldn't get the Clippers without Kawhi Leonard to game seven after blitzing through the regular season. And look, every team reaches a point. When you lose in the playoffs a round before you think you should, or expectations think you should, year after year after year, at some point, we saw with the Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DJ Clippers, at some point you just look around at each other and say, man, it just hasn't been working. We're not getting where we need to go. This is maybe not quite a make or break year for the Jazz, but there's just a lot of noise swirling around and a lot of playoff expectations. And if they don't meet them this year, I think it could get interesting.
I might call Zach after the show and follow up on some of that. I want to hear some of that stuff. You know what? I agree with everything Zach said. But remember how earlier I talked about how impressed I was just sitting there and watching the dudes walk in the room with the Nets? I feel the same way about the Jazz. They got a bunch of really good players on this roster. They had MVP candidates. They had All-Stars. They had six-man candidates. They had Coach of the Year candidates. They had Executive of the Year candidates. And they made a nice addition with Rudy Gay. I like this team. I think 15-1 is a good bet. I'm not saying they're going to win, but I think it's a good bet.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. We don't let teams grow very much anymore, and they've had some pieces that have been injured and whatnot at inopportune times, but it'll be fascinating to keep an eye on them. Speaking of keeping an eye on something, the Sixers will not pay Ben Simmons the $8.25 million owed to him today. This was the second payment of this season's $33 million rookie max extension. So, Zach, I'll start with you. What do you make of all of this as it unfolds in real time, and we started the show with it?
Step by step, this is as expected. Nobody's budging. He's not coming so far, and they're not paying him. And this is all sort of the roadmap that both sides have lined up here. Both sides are talking tough. Both sides are saying, we're not bluffing, we're not bluffing. And the key question is, does this accelerate trade talks at all? And I don't think it does, because I just don't think Philadelphia is making a deal until they get a deal they want. This is not going to make them more desperate to make a deal. It's not going to do anything to Ben Simmons' trade value on that side of the equation. And as long as Philly doesn't get desperate, as long as they don't start off horribly, as long as they don't feel any increased pressure, I think we're either in this for the long haul or something comes out of the woodwork and a trade happens that satisfies the Sixers. If that doesn't happen, I don't think the Sixers are bluffing when they say we're willing to keep playing this out.
You know, this is my 19th year covering the NBA, guys. I've never seen a player with 4 years on his contract hold out. I've never seen a team not pay a guy this kind of chunk of salary, this kind of bonus. I've never seen the kind of posturing and the kind of movements behind the scenes involving something like this. This is all so out of character from what we normally see in the league. It's very difficult to read. Just 4 days ago, Monday, and I know that some of it was just lip service, but we saw a parade of guys coming up there in Philly talking about how they still wanted to leave the door open for Ben Simmons to play. You know, just last week we had some of the players wanting to rent a plane and fly out to see him. And then here we are, Joel Embiid basically says, I didn't even want to get rid of Jimmy Butler, and we did it for you, amongst other things. We got them not paying him the money. Like, it's all deteriorated so fast from even where it was a few days ago. I don't know where this is going at all. It's very difficult for me to read it. I will say this. He's going to get traded, because we've seen guys demand to get traded and go through difficult situations and all kinds of mud being thrown at each other, and ultimately the guys get what they want. And Ben Simmons knows that. The Sixers are going to ultimately have to come to terms with it and trade him, and it's just a matter of how much more blood is going to be spilled between now and that moment.
It'll be fascinating to see how this all plays out. I am curious to see if there's any blowback from other players, agents, etc. You know, if this thing continues to go this route, particularly because of the unprecedented nature of not paying him. I am curious to see how that plays out. But as we say goodbye, the Suns are reporting that Devin Booker is back at practice after missing this week while he was in health and safety protocol. So that's certainly good news. So having him back in the fold, I would imagine, Zach, is great, great news for them, considering all things that have transpired here.
The one thing about Devin Booker, he had a really long summer, so I'm he probably could use that extra couple of days off.
Yep. All right, excellent stuff. All right, well, listen, thank you guys for hanging out. This was kind of like a Hoop Collective meets the Low Post. I know you guys do that on the podcast, but to do it on TV and allowing me to squeeze myself in, I just appreciate it. So thanks. All right. There he is. So download the Hoop Collective podcast. Download the Low Post. Download the Jump podcast. Thanks. NFL Live is up next. See ya. Have a great weekend.